are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
I'm always saying to my brothers, you know, men of colour wouldn't have been able to vote either.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This is Holly, editor at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. 2018 is the centenary of some women winning the right to vote in the UK. Here at Teacher Toolkit, we will be commemorating the anniversary by interviewing 100 women working in the field of education or in the public eye in order to catalogue their lives, celebrate their successes, find out what challenges they face, and discover what they would like to pass on to the next generation. In this episode, Ross was very lucky to have the opportunity to talk to Natasha Devon, MBE. Natasha is a writer and activist and works in schools doing research and delivering lessons on topics like body image and academic anxiety. Listen to Natasha talk about why she'd like to rewrite the curriculum from scratch, why she thinks girls need to stop fearing the disapproval of others, and who she'd like to eat Nando's with.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm with Natasha Devon, MBE. Natasha, can you introduce yourself and tell us what you do to listeners, please?
I have a job that is entirely made up. I think I'm the only person who does it. So I go into about three schools a week, all over the UK, and I work predominantly with 14 to 18 year olds. And I ask them through focus groups and questionnaires what is missing from their PSHE. And then I have a group of scientists that I work with who I ask to tell me the best way to tackle that topic, whether it's body image, whether it's academic anxiety. And then I create a lesson plan around that and then go into the school and present it. Or I get someone else to do it.
Okay, and so you've been all around the UK?
Yeah. And beyond.
Right, and beyond. Tell us where you've been, somewhere exciting.
I go every year to a school in Switzerland.
Okay.
And I've been to Shanghai last year, and later on this year I'm going to Nepal and Bangkok.
Wow.
Which I'm really excited about Nepal. Every time I mention Bangkok to someone, they go, "You're going to get mugged." And so in my head, I'm going to end up in some kind of Thai jail.
No, I've been to Thailand 10 plus times. It's a wonderful place.
Great,
nothing
thanks.
To worry about. So is it possible to give the listeners a description of your typical day or typical week?
Yeah. So on the days that I go into schools, I spend a lot of my life on trains. And that's generally when I tend to get all my kind of admin-y, invoice-y, email-y stuff done. I normally go in, I spend anything between 4 and 8 hours in the school. Sometimes I work just with the pupils. Sometimes I'll do pupils and teacher training, and sometimes speak to the parents as well. And then when I'm not doing that, I write. So I have a weekly column in the TES, and I also write for The Guardian and various other people.
And you manage to keep all that up, all the writing as well?
Yeah. Wow. I'm writing a novel at the moment. I haven't got a book deal or anything, but just for fun.
Write it first, get the book deal later.
Exactly, but it's I realised that I was spending all my time either talking or writing about mental health.
Right.
And that wasn't great for my mental health.
Okay.
I'm trying to write about something else.
Yeah. So can you tell listeners what your education background is and how it kind of led to where you are now?
Yeah, so my degree's in English. And then
Aberystwyth, yes.
In Aberystwyth, yes. I went to Wales to study English, which everyone found hilarious at the time. But at the time they did actually have the best English department in the UK.
Okay.
And really, because I had the grades for Cambridge, and I went to Cambridge, and they were talking to us about what we needed to do to be worthy of Cambridge.
Right.
And then I went to ABBA on one of the only, there's like three sunny days a year there. And I went on one of those.
Right,
I thought, this is like being on holiday. It's amazing. And then the English tutor was talking about the books that we would be studying. He was really passionate about the subject. And I thought, I'm going to go here.
Yeah.
So and then after I left uni, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. lawyer. I don't know why. I think it's because I thought it would be like Ally McBeal.
Never a teacher, no. No.
I just thought I'd be like wearing a short skirt and standing up for what's right. And so I did a course in law and then went, this is really boring.
Yeah.
And I was doing a bit of modelling on the side, which was dreadful. And then it was when I was 25 that I started thinking about schools, and I actually went back to my old school and interviewed a load of teenagers, and that's how everything started.
Okay. So what career achievement are you most proud of? Or can I talk about the MBE?
You can talk about the MBE. I wouldn't say it's what I'm most proud of.
Yeah.
I think actually I'm a fellow of Aberystwyth University,
okay.
And that meant more.
Yeah.
Going back, and when it was given to me, they said that I embodied the kind of principles of Wales, because you know how they're all about, you know, fairness.
Yeah.
And
I lived in Wales for 3 years. And, yeah.
And singing.
Yeah.
You know? So that was a proud moment.
Okay. Can you tell a bit more about your MBE to listeners?
So I got an MBE for services to young people.
Okay. What year?
2015.
Okay.
And I was given it by Prince William, who has this magic ability to just make you feel like the most special person on earth.
Right, lovely.
Yeah, he is. He's got, yeah, I don't know how he does it, but he just looks at you and you feel all
right.
Special.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
And keep up the good work. I think I know the answer to this, but what is the one thing in education you'd like to change? And why?
One thing, that's hard.
Yeah.
Because I think the entire curriculum needs redesigning. Does that count as one thing?
Yeah, we can start again. So why?
Redesign the curriculum from scratch, because I think the kind of core of the curriculum isn't fit for purpose anymore. The world has changed so much since the curriculum was designed that I would love to sit down with people who, particularly people who specialise in the kind of development of the child and adolescent brain,
yeah,
and design it from that point of view. So rather than being like, these are the facts that children need to know,
mm-hmm,
thinking what stage are they in their development and what skills is it best for them to learn at this time?
Okay.
I mean, obviously that's a mammoth task.
Yes, it is. But it's, you know, well, interestingly, Ofsted are looking at the curriculum and wondering why it's so narrow.
Michael Cole.
Tail wagging the dog, yeah. but yeah, so thanks. So the centenary of the vote for women.
Yeah.
If I just kind of go back to the classrooms before we talk about that, what piece of advice would you give to girls in school?
I would say that from our earliest moments, particularly girls, are kind of socialised into this idea that the best that you can be is useful to other people. And we're taught to please. And what that means is that we kind of outsource our self-esteem. And if we say or do something that garners disapproval, we think that we've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, I would say to girls, you know, if it feels right,
mm-hmm,
and you get disapproval, it means you're doing something right. You know, nothing great was ever achieved without a little bit of resistance. So listen to your gut, I think.
Follow your gut.
Yeah.
Thank you. So what does the centenary vote mean to you?
Well, I mean, there have been times in my life where I've been tempted not to vote because I guess that kind of Russell Brand school of thought where you go, there's no one worth voting for. And it has been the fact that it was so hard won that has got me to the polling station where I'm like, no, I have to, you know, because it would be disrespectful not to. So I guess, you know, it's kind of driven home to me, and coming from a mixed race family as well, like I'm always saying to my brothers, you know, men of colour wouldn't have been able to vote either. So I kind of dragged them to the polling station,
yeah,
with me, because we wouldn't have always been able to do it.
Okay. And even if it's turning up and abstaining, that's a good,
yeah,
good expression
spoiling
of
your,
opinion.
Spoiling your paper.
So 100 years later, what would you like to see for women in 100 years? I know it's a difficult question, but where would you like to see female?
I think from a, particularly from a mental health point of view, I think that when women speak about how they feel mm-hmm. or what they're going through psychologically, there's this tendency to assume that they've applied some sort of exaggeration. And I would like to see women taken more seriously and believed. That's what I'd like in a hundred years.
And I think before we record, I talked about, like, you know, the bias associated or validating people's opinions. It's quite important, and I think it's a really good point. So woman's voice is being heard and trusted. Is there anything else you'd hope for the female generation?
I hope that beauty paradigms haven't become progressively more narrower, because we've got to a point now where I think surely the pendulum must be about to swing the other way. Yeah. Like, just yesterday, there was a story in the press about Superdrug are going to be offering Botox and fillers at a cut price on the high street. And that was a moment where I went, okay, now it's time for the backlash.
It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Okay, so quick fire round to finish off. Name three women, dead or alive, you'd like to invite for a dinner party.
Angela Carter.
Okay.
Susie Orbach. Uh-huh. And Afua Hirsch.
And can I ask why for each?
Angela Carter at The Passion of New Eve blew my mind when I read it. It was one of those texts that really sticks in my head, as it completely discombobulated me for a couple of days. And I just think it's her approach to exploring feminism is really innovative. Mm-hmm. And you know, even different from what other feminists were doing at the time. So I just think she'd have a really interesting brain. Susie Orbach, I've met her a couple of times. I just think she's just my hero. Everything, she just has this magic ability to say things once with such resonance that you remember it forever.
Right.
You know? And Afua Hirsch, again, I've met her once, but she's got one of the most interesting minds. Mm. That she's just got something to say that's valuable on everything.
Great. Funny question, this, and kind of teaching and learning. Could you name something specific you've learned this week?
This week?
That's developed your character or resonated?
What I've learned that...
It's a question we ask kids in every lesson, every hour.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So I'm giving you a bit more leeway here for the last week.
I have learned that yoga is much harder than I thought it'd be. Thought it was just stretching. Turns out not.
So you've given it a go for the first time.
Yeah, well, it's really important for your mental health to do stuff that you're not brilliant at.
Right, okay. It's a good tip.
Yeah, it's got to have intrinsic value, so.
Right, I'll give that one a go. what are you currently reading? Books?
I'm reading a couple of things. I'm reading What a Time to Be Alone by Chidera Egeru.
Okay.
And that's where she takes Nigerian sayings that her mum passed down to her and kind of expands on them to talk about things like feminism and mental health. But my favourite one is, it's about not coveting things. And it's, he who wants the same haircut as John, does he have the same shaped head as John?
Right, okay.
Probably makes more sense in Nigerian.
I have been to Nigeria. I went there as a voluntary services 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, fascinating place. I'm sure it's changed lots in the time I've been there.
Yeah.
But yeah, cultural things are very interesting, aren't they, from place to place. Going back to your last, the people around the table for dinner, what would be on the table menu, the Last Supper?
Nando's. Yeah.
Fantastic. If you've got a spare chair, I shall come along. And who would you recommend I interview next? Which female and why?
That's a really good question. Have you interviewed Mary Balstead yet?
Not yet. I've met Mary, but not yet.
No. Oh, get her in. Right. She's brilliant.
Okay, Mary, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. Where can readers find out more about you? I know you've got a book here. We'll get a picture of that. Where can we find out more about you online?
My website, which is natashadevon.com.
And Twitter, Instagram, say?
_ Natasha Devon.
Natasha Devon. So thank you, Natasha, for your time. Lovely to meet you after all these years. So if you're listening to Teacher Toolkit, everyone, you can find out more on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, and follow on the social media channels using the hashtag TTKit100 woman. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit. You can find out more about 100 Years, 100 Women on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, or follow us on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.